The first time I heard about a man named Jim Elliot was when I was in the fifth grade and attending the fundamentalist Christian school that was attached to the Presbyterian church where I attended. He was lifted up as a hero, a star of a certain kind. He was known all through the fundamentalist Christian world for having been a missionary who was martyred. He had been working in Ecuador with a tribe, and from another missionary had heard about a tribe that nobody had approached yet, called the Aka Indians. And so he decided that at some point he really wanted to reach out to them and try to make some kind of relationship with them, despite the warnings about how dangerous they were. So in 1953, he left his wife and his 10-month-old daughter behind and went with four other men out to this tribe. It didn't take long before the five of them were killed. And so as a fifth grader, I listened to his wife, Elizabeth Elliot, talk about how then she felt called to stay in Ecuador and then go and work with this tribe who had killed her husband. Now, this was lifted up as the standard for how to be a true Christian. So as a fifth grader, what I was taught and what I understood was that I needed to be willing to give my life for any other person if I truly wanted to be like Christ. Now, ironically, the principal of that Christian school was later convicted of having sexually abused several of the girls in that school. I was not one of them, nor were my sisters, thank God. But there were several girls who had become victims. And is it any wonder that in an atmosphere where so much of what is being taught is that you need to deny yourself, you need to sacrifice yourself, you need to put other people's interests before your own, that in that kind of environment, any kind of abuse could have happened? Well, later on in life, I was also finally then taught about liberation and feminist theologies. And thank God for the feminist and liberation theologians who finally were able to say, wait a minute. These texts that you're trying to teach become abusive if you're teaching them to people who do not yet have a self, do not yet have a life. The word in Greek is psyche. If you do not yet have a psyche to lay down, how can you lay it down? And so finally, their voice spoke to preachers and teachers, and they said, stop. Stop turning the passages into abusive passages. Wait, and let these people form lives and psyches and selves, and then let's talk about what it means. Very important words. And obviously for them, salvation, the conversation about salvation, had every bit as much to do with liberation as anything else. It was about liberation. The idea that we become partners rather than oppressed or oppressor, rather than subject or object. We both need to be subjects if we're going to be able to work together in partnership. We both need to have been able to form selves. And then, and only then, can we begin to talk about sacrifice. Because then it becomes self-sacrifice. I have a self, and I can choose whether or not I want to sacrifice. An enormous difference there. I was telling the Wednesday Bible study group about an experience I had several years ago at the Presbyterian Peacemaking Conference in Ghost Ranch, New Mexico. The featured speaker that year that I went was a man by the name of Make Masango, Dr. Make Masango. He was both a professor and a pastor in South Africa and had worked very closely with Nelson Mandela and with Desmond Tutu on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He was reminding the group gathered that, again, the purpose of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was to try to bring humanity back to both those who had been oppressed and those who had done the oppressing, because both groups had lost their humanity. So rather than try to convict and stick all the oppressors in jail, maybe the way we bring humanity back is by bringing the two groups together. So he told a number of stories during the course of that week that literally kind of make your hair curl. Stories that at times people had to get up and walk away because they couldn't hear anymore. And so after one of his keynote talks, a group of us gathered for lunch at a picnic table outside. He continued to tell his stories, and one of the young women sitting at the picnic table with us said to him, "I really want to join with you in some way. I want to stand in solidarity with you in some way. Should I come to South Africa? What should I do?" And he sort of got a smile on his face, and he said, "I'll tell you what you can do, and it doesn't even involve going to South Africa." He said, "One of the things that we have been working hard to do since apartheid ended is we have been trying very hard to bring to light the truth about the Coca-Cola company." He said they were the one company throughout apartheid that continued to stand with those in favor of apartheid. They would not remove themselves from South Africa. And he said, "So we are continuing to try to eventually get them to be out of business." He said, "So here's what you can do. You can stop drinking Coca-Cola products." And you should have seen the look on this young woman's face. Her face sort of fell, and she kind of looked down for a few seconds. And he kind of looked at her and was patiently waiting for her to say something. And she looked up again, and she said, "I can't stand Pepsi products." She was serious. She said, "I know that what you're asking me should be a no-brainer. I should be able to say to you in a second, okay, I'll do it." And she said, but I want to be honest. She said, "I don't know if I can give up Coca-Cola products." So he went on to talk. And you'll be happy to know, by the end of that little gathering, she finally looked at him and she said, "I'm going to do my best." She said, "I am going to commit myself to giving up Coca-Cola products, and I hope I can do it." And he said, "I hope you can too, because in that way, you are standing with me and with so many of my brothers and sisters who suffered so much." This is the other story he told. He said that he had been called, soon after apartheid ended, he had been called as a black South African pastor to an all-white congregation. It had never happened before in the history of South Africa. He accepted the call, and he said, "Nobody in that entire country was happy with me, other than that little church that called me." He said that the other black South African pastors were giving him all kinds of trouble. The white South African pastors were giving him trouble. He said nobody was happy. But still he felt called. And so he moved into the parsonage, the home that was owned by the church, and he began his work as their pastor. Within the first 3 weeks that he was there, the first brick came flying through his living room window. He said it became very scary for both him and his family. They were receiving death threats. There were people that were yelling things as they would walk by. It was just a terrible time. And so, the leadership of the church got together, and here's what they decided. They decided that two families would sell their homes, buy the homes on either side of his, and move in. And it's exactly what they did. And they committed themselves as a congregation and as those two families to protecting him and his family. This is how we know love, that you lay down your lives for one another. I don't know of another example that fits as well as that one about laying down one's life. But remember what I said about needing to be a person, needing to have a psyche, needing to have a self in order to make a choice like that. These were people who experienced their full humanity and could make a choice like that on his behalf. They did it willingly, not because they had been guilted into it. And so these are words that are dramatic. They feel dramatic. I can't tell you the struggle I have had with this text and the struggle that we had on Wednesday in our Bible study with this text. To lay down our lives for one another doesn't make a lot of sense in some ways and feels so dramatic. And yet, somewhere in there, there is something about what it means to be community, Christian community together. Remember, this wasn't being spoken for the whole world. Lay down your life for the whole world. It was in a specific context to a group, encouraging them to not be against each other, but to be for each other. And I think part of what was being said in all of 1 John is, this is how you will know love, but it's also how other people will know love. They will see it. Imagine how people saw the love as the two families moved into the homes on either side of Make Masango. Imagine what they saw in that. Last night, J.E. and I were in Oakland at the Paramount Theater. I don't know if any of you were there. KALW does this program that features Tavis Smiley and Dr. Cornell West. And they have written a new book called The Rich and the Rest of Us. And they've been on a speaking tour, so they were at the Paramount Theater last night, and J.E. won tickets the other day. She called the radio station and won tickets, so we got to go. And it was interesting hearing both of them talk about poverty and some things that need to be done about poverty. And Dr. Cornell West stood up and he said, it's pretty simple. It is about love. He said, I know that's not what you want to hear, but that's what you're going to hear. It's about love. Do you love people who are living in poverty? If you do, then speak up and speak out. He said, you know, the biggest thing that's happening in our country right now is that we're not saying it. We're not talking about it. And then he looked at the room and he said, 50%, this is what they said, 50% of you are living in poverty. And what that means, he gave the definition, he said, what that means is that you are within a paycheck or two away from being in some kind of financial trouble. And then he started pointing it at people. He said, you, you're living in poverty. Getting the point across that if you take that whole room and half the people in the room are in that situation, think about that. And you could hear sort of this gasp in the room. And then he went on to say, The problem is we're not talking about it with each other. Of poverty, that we internalize it so much, we feel so ashamed to even be close to it that we can't talk about it. And he said the same thing is happening in churches. Do you know in your churches who is losing their home? Who is that one paycheck away? Who is in need? Do you know? He said, of course you don't. We don't talk about it. So I heard that last night, and of course I was thinking all the while about this text of we need to lay down our lives for one another. And there's something in that for us, I'm not exactly sure what. But there's something in that part of how we learn how to be in the world is how we learn how to be with each other. So can we talk about those things? Can we share those things with each other? Can we tell each other in our community when we've lost a job, or we're on the verge of losing a job, or we've lost a house, or we're on the verge of losing a house? When we begin to share those things with each other, then those who experience their self can make a choice about sacrificing. How can we be with each other? How can we begin to lay down our lives for each other? So part of it is knowing what are the needs. Part of it is, have we been able to develop a self yet? Some of us haven't. Some of us have come to this very community for healing, for wholeness. And we're on that path. Some of us have found that wholeness, and we can make a choice about how to be with others, how to love. Because again, it goes back to love. We do these things out of love for one another. It isn't a love that martyrs itself for the sake of martyrdom. It isn't a love that sacrifices itself in order to get glory. And it isn't a love that gives itself away so there's nothing left. It's a love that comes from a place of wholeness and a place of choice. And again, as the feminist and liberation theologians say, it comes from a place of liberation where we create partnership with each other, where both people, both sides, both parties are subjects and not objects. So let us go forward together in love, considering what it would mean to lay down our lives for one another, what it would mean to talk about the things that are difficult to talk about, to share with one another in truth, so that truly we can love one another. Amen.